Broadcasting live from the Huntington Bank Studios, it's John and Lance.
On ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
Now here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
Good Friday morning, everybody. John and Lance along with Dell for the next 3 hours here on ESPN 97.5. Lance is back from Jacksonville. Yep,
three birdies yesterday, or on Wednesday.
Yeah, you had frisbee golf?
No. I'm a member guest.
Do you think it's appropriate, I was thinking about this, that you're helping the Jaguars, a division opponent, with their scouting? You feel that's appropriate as a Houstonian, a lifelong Houstonian?
Do you think I'm somehow helping them? Do you think I came in and they said, now this is the way you do it?
Well, you gave away some trade secrets to the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Trade secrets from who, me?
Your trade secrets. Well, teaching them how to evaluate players.
It was funny because, you know, they do it professionally, so they have, like, they'll take a look at a player, right? And so Alec and I were able to sit in. So I was invited by the general manager. He's a young guy. He's in his 30s, James Gladstone, who I met at the O-Line Masterminds Clinic, not this summer, but summer before. He and Tony Boselli. Tony's his right-hand man. And I knew Tony, you know, from when he was here at the Texans. Tony was, like, shocked you and I are still on the radio, by the way. There's no way. Yeah. We still are, Tony. Nope, they had gotten sick of us. Yeah, everyone's sick of us, but we're still there.
No, that's true.
And so they're going over. We watch film after. We're at the practice, Alec and I, my son. We're at the practice. You know, I'm speaking with a guy named Brian Hill, and Alec was speaking to the SEC, the SEC scout over there at Jacksonville. Great guy. I mean, spent like 45 minutes talking to Alec. And then we watched a little bit of the practice. Trevor Lawrence, not great. It was the first practice of the year. Then we go in and you go watch tape of the practice. We watch it with all the scouts and all the personnel guys. So we watch the practice tape, and, you know, Tony Boselli's running a clicker. He just had shoulder replacement. I said, it's still bothering you? He goes, I said, why'd you just get it? He goes, well, they told me I should have had it 15 years ago, but I kept saying no. I said, why'd you keep saying no, Tony? This has been a problem since the expansion draft. It's been an issue. In 2002, he goes, I don't know, I just did. He goes, I'm glad I got it done now. This is going to be great. But he ran the clicker. They watched that, and then we went down, and we had, it took a little while. We went down and had lunch, waited for about another hour, got to look at their facility. They got a great practice facility, by the way, really great. What I didn't know is, in the area they're practicing in, their stadium, they're working on a brand new stadium. They're going to play in this new stadium, but it's only going to seat 40,000 people this year. Then in 2027, they're going to go play, I can't remember where, Charlie, the guy who's kind of the assistant to James Gladstone, the GM, he played football at Rice. He played 4 years at Rice. We talked about that. I'm like, yeah, it's not really very consequential. I had no idea. He goes, yeah.
No one knew.
It was a real shame Mike Bloomgren went and coached there because he was a really good coach, and he had no way. He goes, you can tell everyone that Bloomgren thought this was going to be the stamp, like he could turn this into a Stanford. I'm like, yeah, everyone thinks that until they get here and realize, oh, they won't spend any money.
So wait a minute, the stadium.
So they're going to go play in a difference. They're not even playing in Jacksonville 2027. This next year, they're going to have 40,000 there at most because they're working on the stadium. And then the year after, and I'm like, how is the stadium not done for 2027? He goes, I don't know. There's some kind of delay. So they're not even going to be playing in Jacksonville in 2027.
Well, they're playing somewhere in London, because that's where they play.
It could, but no, they're playing up the road. But anyway, so then we you know, sat and they did a whole thing on safeties. That was their concentrating on safeties. And then, you know,
why did they ask you there? What did you do?
Well, that's what I was saying. At 3 o'clock, they started that at 1 o'clock. So for 2 hours, they were going over some of the safeties that are in this year's draft. And then me and Bucky Brooks at 3 o'clock, they started asking us, you know, these questions. It was conversational. They've got what's called water cooler. So they kind of, that's where you just kind of just kick it. I mean, James is, they've got emojis on their scouting reports. Their scouting reports are one-liners. He likes when you come up with clever, funny stuff, as long as it gives an idea of who a guy is. Like you would like it. It's instead of just boring stuff, it's pretty interesting. They've got temperature. I don't want to give everything away, but they got temperature gauges on, you know, how much you like a player. Like it's got a temperature. If you're cool on it, it might say 65 degrees, but it could also say 88 degrees, and it's literally a thermometer. An emoji of a thermometer with that temperature. I mean, so they do things way different. But it also comes from the Rams because the Rams do things way different. But they were, you know, they just ask us about our process and things like that. But what you have to understand is they'll have 9 guys looking at a single player. Like, they've already got grades on players right now. I am one person. Look, so what I do really has nothing to do with what they do. But I think the thing they were most interested in is the media stuff, like how producers and headline writers will look for things that either create clicks or get the most views by going lowest common denominator, you know, like the same Shador Sanders stuff over and over and over, the same whatever topic it is. It's the same one. They were kind of interested in some of that stuff. And like one guy who played linebacker at Florida, I'm forgetting his name, but he played with Aaron Hernandez. He told me Aaron Hernandez was a total follower. He said if we told him to go over and slap some guy in a bar, he would just go and slap. No questions asked. Just go slap somebody. I'm like, well, that's not great. He goes, yeah. He goes, but he wasn't a crazy guy when he was there. I said, did you kind of see all the stuff with him? He goes, no, not at all. But you could see he just wanted to fit in. He said they dropped him into a locker room with some certified goons, quote unquote, his word, certified goons, and he wanted to fit in. And he goes, that's where everything started to fall apart. And we know those national championship Florida teams did have some certified goons on them. There's no question.
Oh yeah, no question.
We know all. I mean, it's in the annals of history. But they were really interested that the headline writers are the ones who write those salacious headlines, and really media now, really social media directors. Like you and I have not been happy with a couple videos that nothing Lexi's done, and some Sam, but some of them were Brandon, where, you know, their job is to try to get as many eyes as possible. So their headlines on their posts kind of make it look more controversial, like conversations John and I are having on video that they cut. The post looks more salacious than our actual conversation. And that's an issue around sports media right now, is people who are quote-unquote writing headlines, their job is to get as many views as possible. So they write some stuff sometime that's, you know, controversial or that's hot take-ish on the headlines, trying to get you to click on it. And I'm not a big fan. So they didn't – I don't. They thought we write our own headlines and stuff like that. No. I said, no, that's – you know, and on TV, they didn't really understand that it's not the hosts of the show who are coming up with all the topics or the guests on the show. I said, it's producers behind the scenes that kind of start it. Sometime it will change some. But, you know, I told them my method of doing things, but their method is obviously much better because it's over a longer period of time. There's more people cross-checking a single player. Like one guy asked me, how do you deal with, like, if somebody tells you, what do you do if you know about character issues for a player? What does that do to your grades? And I said, that's a good question. I said sometimes I'll move a guy down, but I won't say anything about it. I said sometimes I'll use coded language like maturity issues. And then Bucky jumped in. He goes, yeah, like we knew James Pierce. Everyone talked about James Pierce was a huge problem coming out of Tennessee. But we couldn't really say that on the air. The league doesn't want us killing a guy with that kind of stuff. Plus, you saw what – I didn't mention this, but you saw what happened with Todd McShay, with Jalen Carter. Like, you know, the general – and I said the general public. This is what I pointed out. I said there's a lot of people in this industry, in the media side, who may know something or they may have an opinion. I said there were a lot of guys who just didn't want to smoke with the fans or with Deion Sanders when it came to, you know, giving their real opinion on Shador Sanders. And so, and Bucky talked, and well, I mentioned that, and I said, that's why everyone thought Shador would be drafted here. Like, that's, and who, obviously people in the media and fans, you're being told this the whole time because you see where Shador is all the time on the list. You have no idea that there's a good chance he's not going in the first round. And now I thought he might fall to the third just because quarterbacks don't usually get taken in a second. But they were – that was something I don't think they anticipated, that there are people who just don't want to smoke. And so they won't tell their real opinion. They'll just go along with – it didn't happen a lot, but – with a guy like Shador, you knew how polarizing it was, and you knew that if you put something that wasn't popular, you were going to get mauled on social media. And Deion could come after you.
Well,
some of those guys know Deion, and they don't
want it. You know how great he is. That's all. You know how great. So, well, while you were gone, while you were gone, I don't know if you heard, but the Astros got to 500.
I heard they traded Yordan.
No, no, that's what Mark DeRosa wants, and that's not going to happen.
No.
Or Jeremy Pena, or anyone else.
Or anybody.
Else. That can help you win. But they're a half game behind Texas now. Texas is in town this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And our Astros not only got to 500, but they have a chance to get into first place, which May 20th, when they were 11 games under 500, seemed impossible. And yet here we are, not even in August yet, and here they are, possibly going to be in first place after tonight's game.
And winning record.
And a winning record. A winning record and first place. I'm not even... Chance and I talked about this yesterday. I'm not even worried about Texas. We got our sights set on the Rays and first place in the American League.
In the American League?
In the American League.
Wow.
That's right. Just 10 games back with 2 months to play.
Okay.
All right, that's all we got. That's all we got to make up is 10 games.
Lambert
in
keeps
2 months.
Dealing like Lambert.
Well, Hunter Brown is Hunter Brown. Okay, we got. I mean, I think Imai is going to be something special going down the stretch here. Down the stretch here. Of course, I really thought Mike Burrows was going to be, but he hasn't been. We got Hunter Brown going tonight against Eovaldi on Apple TV, no less. Okay. Then we got Rennell against DeGrom. And then we're not sure who we're going to throw against Rocker, but we are going to throw someone probably. Probably.
Rocker.
Yeah.
You know, on paper, those are three pretty good looks for the Astros from a pitching standpoint. But the Rangers aren't good either. The Rangers are just barely sitting ahead of the Astros. So while the Astros have had a disappointing season win-loss-wise, you know, it is, if you know, Astros baseball – we've seen the ups and downs, and then you take a step up and you take a step back or whatever the case may be. But if you find a favorable starting point, you can find good baseball results for the Astros over the last, I don't know, I have to go and find a tipping point there. But they have a winning record on the road now, and they are one game under 500 at home. If they play well against the Rangers, they're going to have a winning record at home, on the road. The regular season, they will probably not go on the positive side for run differential, but they'll be in first place.
No.
I mean, they got a chance to be in first place. This is a big, big series because everybody in your division has lost two games in a row or more. They're all like 2-8 in the last 10, or 4-6, or 3-7. The Astros are 8-2 in their last 10. I think the Rangers are 5-5. So, I mean, the Astros basically are just playing pretty good baseball right now. And they're winning late. I mean, they're winning late. They're getting hits when they need to. They're doing the little things. And other teams are just having to tip their cap to the Astros.
Well, and listen, you think the Mariners are 3-10 in their last – the Astros are 8-2. Mm-hmm. Rangers 5-5.
Right.
And the Astros have the best record in Major League – in the American League, rather, since – May 20th. And that, and so Dell thought maybe the season should just officially started on May 20th. Yesterday, that's what he brought to the table.
Wow.
That the season should now just officially have started May 20th instead of where it did.
Well, like Dell, so they play no, like the first 110 games are not played? Is that kind of the thought? Or
No. They have since May 20th. They're 11 games over, like 39-20 or 39-28, whatever they are.
Since May.
Whatever they are. Or 31-20, I think they are. And so that's when the season should have started.
So we'll April. We're not doing baseball in April.
April,
is what he's
saying. April doesn't matter. Oh. It's not a big deal.
Well, it
it's
never
how
is,
you
is
played
it?
Over the last 51 games.
This really does. You know, even though every game does count the same, there is the old school baseball adage of these games don't really matter. You know, this year's doing no favors to the people like us who believe, no, they all matter. Every game obviously matters. All games are important. And those games don't matter. People are like, told you they don't matter.
Mm-hmm. They don't.
They don't matter till July. Sorry, guys. They don't matter until July.
We got 2 months left in the season, and we got the Rangers in town. Nathan Eovaldi, Houstonian, on the mound for the Rangers against Cy Brown tonight. So we got that going on. We got a lot of Texan sound to get to. We're going to do all of that. We start with this break. 713-780-3776. Come hang with us here on the show.
You're listening to John and Lance.
Broadcasting live from the Huntington Bank Studios. Here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
All right, welcome back here on ESPN 97.5. We had a conversation yesterday. Dell is not convinced about the offensive line. Got a lot of guys who have a lot to prove. You got a possible rookie. D'Amico talked about Rutledge yesterday. I think... You know, he's got some ship to him. Mm-hmm. He's not afraid to bury you in the dirt. And we saw that at college. We saw him blocking that way. He ain't afraid to bury a guy. And this offensive line needs that. You got a guy, Ariante, who was middle of the pack last year. You got a guy, Wyatt Teller, who, by his own admission, was not focused in Cleveland because of all the losing. You've got Ed Ingram, who played well last year. You got Braden Smith. He's got to stay healthy, misses games. But he, you know, Dell's point yesterday was, there's a lot of guys that are being let go. And usually, if you're a good offensive lineman, you're not let go by teams. But that's the case with what looks like three starters. I think Rutledge has got to start. You got to have the first rounder on the field. I don't think there's any question that he is going to beat out Jake Andrews. We saw what Jake Andrews is, and Jake Andrews will be a nice backup for Rutledge. But Rutledge has got to play, and he hasn't played center, so you got that going on here.
He needs to earn it though. That's D'Amico's way.
Yep.
So he's. It doesn't surprise me that I think one of the radio hosts had a little report from practice, and some of it included the offensive line, some of the offensive line reps and where guys were on the offensive line in terms of first team, second team. And he had Rutledge as second team, taking second team reps. And I guess just people on Twitter jumped on, like, you're not supposed to say that. The team said, and I was thinking, when did fans start doing the media relations job? This has kind of a weird angle. For people like, hey, wait a minute, you're not supposed to be reporting on that. Like,
why? Can't you report on that?
Well, they never want that. There's things, and I guess apparently before camp they said that. I don't think any of us were invited to some media get-together. I don't think the station was invited at all to the media get-together. They had some kind of media get-together at some place for drinks and food, and I don't think anyone here even got an invite. But we wouldn't know the rules, but... you have to, like, I'm going to have to email today to RSVP to go to practice tomorrow. But I need to get out there so I can see some of this from our limited viewing. But, yeah, I mean, D'Amico wants you to earn it. So Rutledge is going to start on second team, and then he's going to have to earn it. I expect him to earn it.
What he was working with second team a lot, but he's also been working in with first. He's been we've seen that
plenty. Not supposed to.
Well, if you could say he's working the second team, then you could say he's been working in with the first, too. Here is D'Amico talking about Rutledge and what he brings. Well, you got... Yeah, it's on the rundown.
It is?
Oh, Caden McDonald, he's got in there today. Okay.
Yeah.
I had Rutledge in there yesterday. Okay.
Well,
so, anyway.
He talked about Caden, too. This actually, the Caden sound is really good because Caden McDonald, of course, is a second-round pick in the rookie. And D'Amico Ryan's. Now, Caden is a heavy-handed, physical player, very good against the run, big boy, just turned 21, so he's still going to keep growing and getting bigger. And kind of a, you know, I was told by one scout, and this is, no, it was an agent who told me wasn't sure if the Texans would like him because he's so immature or whatever. But that was his opinion when he met him to potentially represent him, and then they didn't get him. And so now, you know how those things go. Now, yep. All of a sudden, this is before the draft. So now he wasn't a big fan. D'Amico Ryans appears to be a pretty big fan of Caden McDonald, obviously, and he passed the swarm test and was drafted in the second round. Here's D'Amico Ryans talking about the rookie nose tackle and how rough he's been on some of the coaches.
Hey, Caden is really show how strong he is. He's probably one of the stronger guys that we have. You see him doing drills. He's knocking the coaches back a lot. Coaches are trying to hold bags and be tough guys, but Caden is doing a great job of showing the strength that he has. Now, can he pull it all in, and can you consistently play with the proper hand placement, the proper footwork every single row?
Yeah, Caden McDonald's going to be on. There's no question, Caden McDonald. That's different with the defensive linemen. They go in and out. You know, they sub in and out. They're interchangeable. That's no big deal. You have got to have a lot of continuity on the offensive line. We do have sound. Here is D'Amico. D'Amico also talked about Rutledge, not yesterday, but the day before. And Rutledge, along with all the other – D'Amico talked about not only Rutledge, but all the rookies and what they need to do to get on the field.
Well, you come out of the camp, everybody's competing. So our rookies, you know, if you just attack it the right way, I tell our somebody has to be rookie of the year. All right, rookies play well every single year. And it's not where you're trying to go out and attain that. It's just, man, are you just locked in on the small details, what the coaches are asking you to do every day? You have a competitive spirit. You have a willingness and a want to succeed and do great. You're going to do that. So for all of our rookies, Keelan, Marlon, everybody, right, they just have to come out and just work hard at their craft, and they'll be exactly where we need them to be.
That was his answer on Rutledge, which didn't even mention Rutledge. D'Amico is, I guess, trying to avoid that. I don't know if it's a touchy situation with Jake Andrews. I don't know. I cannot see the first round pick not being on the field this year. I just can't see it. Adell brought up, though, well, they had a first round pick, 13th overall pick, that was really, really bad. But he started.
No, I think he'll play, but I think he'll earn it. You've reached a certain status with your roster now, and so there's standards, and D'Amico's going to make sure he reaches those standards. And what you do, this isn't unusual for a first pick to not be on the first team, and you know, to not be first team and have to earn it. He'll earn it because the guy ahead of him is just not good enough. So I think he'll earn it, and I think he'll be there, and I think he'll be physical. Read something about on social media, someone who was at the practice said that he took Azeez Al-Shaair to the ground, went down to the ground to finish him on a block, and Azeez jumped up, pumped up. You know, basically, it could have been one of those things that he was pumped up, like, yeah, what's up? Like, but it also sounded like Azeez was excited to have an offensive lineman with that kind of, you know, with that kind of ish to him a little bit.
That's good.
And that's good. Yeah, that's really good. That's really good. So, I'm expecting him to be a starter. He's going to have some issues here and there with pass protection. He's a rookie. You know how it goes. But I'm looking forward to it. But you know, it is really interesting, the CJ Stroud stuff now, and this is just not going to go away until he plays well in the playoffs.
No.
Clint Sterner talked about an interception. Clint was a former, you know, NFL quarterback. He was a backup, but played at Arkansas. He was in the league with the Cowboys. I don't know other teams potentially. I can't remember, but he made a comment about a play that CJ had where he threw an interception. And I mean, the comments underneath, you're a hater. This is to take everything this guy says with a grain of salt. He wanted Bryce Young, which has nothing to do with it. And, you know, Clint just basically gave he described what happened in this practice, and he said that can't happen. He goes, when you're going 7-on-7 and you're just doing early looks, and Clint described it, he goes, you can't have these interceptions. I thought it was a fair comment. I thought what he said. Then you have other people, oh, my God, this and the walk, it's over. Because now it's just known as the walk. CJ's walk, which ended their championship aspirations.
It's the second day of training camp.
Crazy what everyone's saying, but that just shows you.
I know. What if he throws a pick in training camp? This is okay. We're breaking it down.
Yeah, isn't it amazing?
It's so stupid.
Yeah, it really is. But I mean, people are already lining up on the CJ and anti-CJ sides, and there's just. It's just nothing that can be done about it other than play games and play well. That's the only way you make that stuff go away.
That's all. And you know what? When it comes down to it, he will play. He is going to be on the field, and he's going to have some good moments, and he's going to have some bad moments. And that's what's going to happen this season. And you know what? And when he has bad moments, then we talk about it. And during the season, not in. Second day of training camp. Goodness gracious. I disagree wholeheartedly with Clint. You can't have that kind of intercept. What? It's camp.
Yeah.
It doesn't
matter.
Well,
he was speaking very specifically about a certain type of thing early on that he just said CJ's throw should have never been made. It was kind of one of those things. So it was a little bit more specific, but he is just so polarizing. Over 21 million views and counting. For a video of him just walking in, I showed it to my wife. I said, "Does this make you think of anything?" I showed it to her, and she didn't really have anything to say. I said, "Well, it's got 21 million views, and it is, and people are all over him about looking like a seventh grader, like he's got a dump in his pants, and he's walking with a dump in his pants." And I said, she goes, "Really? Just with that, you know, with that video?" I said, "Oh yeah," I said, "Oh." Yeah, I mean, Twitter's got time for this. Don't worry. They got some time. They carved out some time to go. And to be fair, I saw it and I went, oh, no. I went immediately to the comments. Then I thought, oh, the social media people. I do wonder, did they apologize to them? I know they've got to feel terrible. They thought they were just doing something, you know.
Do you think they? I don't know.
I think they feel terrible. They know. Oh, everybody knows what. Everyone knows how this turned into. It was turning into stuff on ESPN, like on Pat McAfee. Everyone knows what happened with that video. Everyone knows, and the social media team has to feel terrible that they put. All they did was just put a video out of a guy walking into a facility. But it just, I don't know. It just didn't look great. I'm with everyone else. It didn't look great. But you stack that on top of all the interceptions in the postseason, and people believing the CJ has quote unquote aura leakage, and a lack of confidence and all that, and I mean, fans can fight amongst themselves about stuff. Stay on that side when CJ turns it around. This, you know, this revenge tour for CJ is going to be a movie, and all. I don't care. Just play well, and then it all goes away.
Yep.
Play well, and it all goes away.
All right. When we come back. There is, I can't believe there is serious, allegedly, serious consideration for bringing back someone to the Houston Rockets. We will talk about it on the other side. Don't go anywhere.
ESPN 97.5.
You are listening to Houston's longest-running sports radio morning show
on ESPN 97.5 and the ESPN Houston app.
From the Huntington Bank Studios, here's John and Lance.
So, SI's Eric J. Santos. I don't know him. Do you know him? Never heard of him? This is what he wrote. Considering Westbrook's willingness to accept a vet minimum and leadership aspect, the Rockets can pitch themselves to him as a serious destination to potentially win his first NBA title.
Who said this?
Eric J. Santos.
Who is he?
He works for SI.
Come on, Eric. Be better. Do better.
Eric.
There's so much in that that you read that is just troubling. Number one, the Rockets have to pitch themselves to Russell Westbrook.
Yeah.
Number
Gotta
two,
beg him. Gotta beg
give
Russell
him a chance to,
come back.
To finally win a title. Like, it's, come on. Come on. What are we doing? What are we doing? This is, Eric, that's libelous. You cannot say stuff like this.
So I went back because Russell has been really, really bad at three-point shooting. But I went back and looked. The worst three-point shooters with a 1,000 attempts minimum, the worst three-point shooters in NBA history, the worst three are all Rockets. Can you name them?
The worst, right off the, with a minimum amount of percentages, you said?
You got to have at least 1,000 attempts.
I mean, I feel like Corey Brewer should be
Corey
there.
Brewer's number two.
Okay. You got Russ. You're already counting him. Russ is not.
Russ is 21st.
Golly, this is really tough. Is it since when? When's the starting point?
It's a while ago.
Yeah.
And they're not known first and foremost as Rockets.
Yeah, I don't know. I would have no idea.
Charles Barkley is number one.
Oh, God.
26.6%.
Yeah, and he shot some like he shouldn't have.
Yeah, he shot over 2,000. Corey Brewer is second at 28.4%. Josh Smith, 28.5%.
It's funny. I was thinking Josh Smith because that was the era of Daryl bringing in bad shooters into a philosophy where he believed three is bigger than two, three is better than two.
Yeah, and he brought the worst shooters
in. I mean, that's just, to me, that was just, I wanted to, you know, I believed in Daryl so much, and I just, he must know something here. This is, man, he is definitely playing chess because other people are trying to get good shooters, but Daryl's like ahead of the game. Because he's bringing in bad shooters. So there's something. Daryl's got something cooking. Daryl's got something cooking.
Could Chip Engelon even help Russell Westbrook and his three-point?
Russell's not much of a listener, right? I get the feeling Russell really doesn't want your coaching or advice on how to do something at this stage of his career.
We just can't bring Russell back.
No, we're not doing this. Don't go back and do this stuff. Don't do this.
I mean, you
move on. Move
you
on.
Brought in Smart. Marcus Smart already.
You survived Russell, and then let's face it, that's when you were headed to the depths. You were headed downwards. The Chris Paul for Russell Westbrook was the beginning of the end for the Rockets, and it wasn't all because of Russ, but it was the beginning of the end. Russell Westbrook for Chris Paul. It signified and signaled a series of moves that spiraled the Rockets downhill. And I don't want to go back to that. So
I mean, does anybody want that?
No.
I've got Rockets Nation. 100%. One last run with a picture of Russell Westbrook.
No, come on, guys. Don't be idiots. He's been a loser his whole career. He puts up stats and doesn't help his teams win at a high level. Hasn't for a long time. It's not necessarily Russell's fault, but you know some of it is. But he's not a fit. He's not a fit with this. Let's cut it out. Let's cut the crap. Build with what you have. Stop trying to just throw names in there because Russell averaged a triple double 1 year or a couple years. I don't care. Don't do this. Don't just bring back names that you recognize. Don't do that. You know, build on what you have and see what happens. I thought they just drafted a point guard. I thought Fred VanVleet was coming back. I thought Marcus Smart was added. What are we doing with Russell Westbrook? There's three guards there. What are we doing with Russell Westbrook? Why would that even be a consideration? I don't even understand why somebody would say this.
And when you just brought in, okay, you got Marcus Smart, you got Fred VanVleet coming back.
Right.
Why in the hell would you want?
It doesn't make any difference. It's just a guy who's writing an article. Unless there's somebody else, that's why I can't take that serious.
No. No. They can't. No. Do not. You guys do that. Are you kidding me? I don't think there's any way Ime would be on board with that. No way.
I don't think so.
No. Marcus is a defensive player. Marcus is a pain in the ass for other guys. That I could, you know, that I see. Russell Westbrook on the Rockets again?
Yeah. No.
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 Well, that was the bad. Those were the bad days.
Yeah, those were the bad old days.
We ain't doing that again.
Not interested in all that.
I ain't interested. 713-780. Maybe you are. I don't know. 713-780-3776. Let us know what you think about that. You're more than welcome. We had to ask you when you were in
Jacksonville.
Did you mention Japan?
Yeah, once.
Yeah, he did.
Bucky Brooks asked it. Yeah, if that's on your bingo card. Bucky Brooks was telling some guy. I don't know who he was. I think I'm supposed to know him, but I didn't know him. I don't know if he was a coach or what he was. He said, I guess this guy does some running, and he said Lance's wife just finished the Big Six marathon. She ran in Tokyo, and that's really the only way it came up. The guy, oh, she did. She what was Tokyo like? And so, and then.
Yeah,
for the next 30 minutes.
So there you go.
For the next 30 minutes, he wasn't able to.
That hit the bingo card.
Yeah, yeah, I did get that.
Did you mention the kids? Did you mention a pizza fight in a car?
No, I don't really mention that. That's like people like Art mention it.
Yeah,
I don't even mention that. That was a terrible time.
Art said you would mention your brisket.
Yeah, no, I didn't mention anything. I mostly just listened to what they had to say. Okay. You know, they had every team, and I think I can say this. They had every team in the NFL up on the board in their system. They built an entire system out of AI. It was incredible. They built it in a day. Actually a few days. But they have every team, and they have a ranking, 1 through 32, at every position group. Right? Every position, quarterback, running back. And I didn't even think about this. I wish I would have seen where they had the Texans quarterback. I didn't even think to look.
Nice job.
I know, but they had quarterback, running back, wide receiver. I know running back was low. They had running back low, like 26th. Quarterback, running back, wide receiver, tight end. I think offensive line as a group, I think. And then they had it on defense, and then they had a special teams ranking. The Texans, middling on offense. It was kind of middling for the most part. And on defense, ones, twos, threes, and fours. I don't even know if they even hit I think maybe linebacker was a six or something like that. But the Texans, really high. They had the three highest, and I'm not going to tell you all the teams, the three highest AFC teams for rosters and the three lowest, and the Texans were in the top three rosters of the AFC.
Yeah.
And that's their independent, that's another team in the division. They've ranked all the division, because they have to, they write up every position group, and they give grades to players and stuff like that. And sure enough, one of the top three were the Houston Texans, and the other two were pretty good teams, as you can assume.
Did you get that little camera out where you take the pictures of it and then you bring it back to D'Amico and Casario?
No, I'm actually probably.
Well, you're
not
a good spy at all.
No, because I don't think probably Nick Casario likes me. He didn't talk to me, so I don't talk to Nick Casario. Yeah. I don't have anything to do with Nick Casario. Nick Casario is a patriot, so they think everyone's out to get them.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, it's true. Like, I've talked to D'Amico and tried to, you know, impart some things to D'Amico at different times in terms of information I had that might help. Not giving away too much, just where guys could go in the draft. No, there's other teams that are much friendlier to me than the Texans. Nick Casario literally thinks everyone's out to get him because he's a patriot. It's not his fault.
No.
Everyone who's ever.
It's how he was raised.
Oh, it's how he was raised. I mean, I talked to their college director of scouting worked for the Chiefs when Scott Pioli was there and when Todd Haley was there. But Scott Pioli, he's like, yeah, it was, you know, it was bad at the end. There's just complete and total paranoia in the building.
Yeah.
It's really, really bad. Really, really bad. So, yeah, I'd love to talk to Nick. I mean, I've talked to Nick at the Senior Bowl one time and, you know, ask him questions. And I think there was one other time, but Nick doesn't really want anyone's help. Nick doesn't, I'm being serious here. Nick doesn't have any interest. If you're not in his little clique, you're dead to him. That's just how he is. You know, loves football, is a football robot, but he would have no interest in talking to somebody like me or anything like that. It's funny, I got people in the division more interested in talking to me than the people here that I'd most like to talk to in the hometown, but is what it is. If you're a Patriot, people don't even realize how much I was helping the Texans at one point. Rick Smith in the Deshaun draft let him know that Deshaun was going higher than he thought. Bill O'Brien, long text string about offensive linemen in the draft that they ended up taking Titus Howard. So I've helped the local team on several occasions, but Nick Caserio is not a guy who I think has any interest in talking to me at all. But I have moved information over there, pertinent information to them with where some guys could get drafted, just not through him.
Yeah. All right. Let's break. 713-780-3776 is the number. Anybody, you got anything you want to talk about with the Texans, Rockets, Astros, whatever? Come on in. 713-780-3776.
You're listening to John and Lance.
Broadcasting live from the Huntington Bank Studios. Here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
Hey, does it bother you guys at all that Tank Dell's not practicing right now? I mean, there's been no shortage of videos showing him doing hard cuts. And, of course, you know, just in T-shirt and shorts with, I think, the Footwork King. I don't know if that's who it was with or not, who's here locally. A guy who works a lot of wide receivers. We saw him making big, hard cuts. I don't know if this is just an abundance of caution. I think D'Amico has maybe addressed it briefly. I know they were already told, media was told that Tank wasn't going to be practicing early on. So, I guess it makes sense. Why throw him out there? I assume he's ready to go. I mean, it looks like physically he's ready to go when I see those videos. I see hard cuts. Have we gotten any? I've missed it. If they had any real reason for Tank not being out there, I mean, he hasn't played football in a long time. I'm kind of surprised he's not out there getting some basic reps, especially right now. But I don't know. I guess they're just going to wait a few weeks before Tank starts practicing.
Well, yeah, the thought was he was. I mean, it was awesome that he was ready for it. Right?
Right.
And they're just being cautious.
Yeah.
You know what? With Noel down, I don't think you want to maybe push Tank too far.
Did y'all mention that yesterday about Jalen Noel being it's pup list?
Yeah, it's non-football, but it's not injury. Supposed to be serious. It's supposed to be it's a finger.
Right. It's non-football injury.
It's non-football related injury. It's not serious, but he's not starting. And I think they're just bringing Tank. They're just being cautious with him.
Oh, yeah. That's kind of what my thought is, but he hasn't played I'm still waiting for Tank Dell to show up. I mean, after it's probably the Joe Mixon thing a little bit, although they never told you, yeah, Joe should be out here later in camp or anything. It was always just very guarded and quiet. And so now with Tank, I just want to see him actually out there getting some reps, because I'm starting to feel like this is going to be a big part of trying to get CJ back to where he needs to be.
Yeah.
He loves Tank individually as a person. They're very close friends, and Tank was one of the guys that was – I'm just trying to recreate me. I'm just thinking, man, if they can just recreate 2023, you know, bring Austin Deculus back, let him be a backup somewhere.
What?
Austin just, you know, Deculus. Let's get the gang back together.
We're not doing Austin Deculus, although that Scruggs. Was the best line he had was this rookie year.
No, that was not the best line. They just somehow –
Yeah, well,
somehow he had good stats.
He played his best. He played his best with that line.
He did. That's what makes me say, I mean, some of it is on the offensive line, but there's a lot of it just on your quarterback, because what he had his rookie year was terrible.
Yeah, but it was even worse.
It was better than the year
two.
The second year was unacceptable.
Both being healthy, Tank and Noel, Tank's the guy, right?
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, it's Tank. It's going to be Tank. Tank's the guy you know can make plays. We really saw very little of Jalen Noel last year other than special teams, other than kick returns, which he was really good at. That was fine. That was great. But as far as making plays, Tank was a beast.
You know, but one thing to keep in mind is Jalen Oyles been in this offense for a year. Tank hasn't. I don't know how many mental reps Tank took, if he was in the meeting rooms or not. But remember, Nick Cayley's first year was last year, and he did some things different. You know, his offense is different than Bobby Slowick's.
We do have CJ talking about that very thing, though.
All right.
Because you got a bunch of different guys with a bunch of different abilities, and apparently Nick Cayley is going to tailor the offense to abilities.
Early on, you know, had some things that I feel like we, you know, were just figuring each other out on playing styles, on system, you know, trying to keep it in the system, but also make it tailored to the guys. And I think he's done a great job. You know, I mean, me and his relationship has grown. We talk a lot. We try to communicate as much as we can. I'm in his office a bunch. So it's nice, man, to, you know, have somebody who, you know, wants to see you succeed and, you know, wants the best for you. So, you know, I think this year we'll take another step and, you know, be better than we were last year.
Well,
that all sounds good.
Well, he's got economically, financially, Nick Cayley needs CJ Stroud to be good.
Professionally. Well, both of them need each other.
Each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Nick Cayley especially needs CJ to be good, to be a good player.
You know, because talking about this with some people in Jaguar, we were talking a little bit about Tank Dell, and I mean about CJ, and I think actually it may have been Bucky Brooks. I think the thought is you never want your quarterback to get to a 60. You're like, it's highly unlikely. I think the belief in the league is it's highly unlikely the Texans get to a sixth year with CJ, meaning 6 year, meaning a franchise tag. Even though in my mind I'm thinking, well, if you're not totally sold on CJ Stroud, you've still got this year, which is club control. You got year five, which is going to be $20+ million, and then you've still got a franchise tag, which would be a sky high. Like it'd be over $50 million, but it'd be a 1 year deal. It's not a commitment. And I'm thinking, well, that's viable. You've got 6 years to really make a decision on CJ. But I think everyone else feels like, no, not really. You need to make your decision probably after this year. And if
it's
you're not
rare
sure on him,
it happened with Kirk Cousins. Uh-huh. It happened with Dak.
But Kirk wasn't the first round, wasn't the second pick of the draft.
No, but he went, you know, he was fourth rounder, and
right.
He only had 4 years.
Dak was a fourth rounder.
He went franchise tag with him twice.
Right,
they went
franchise
with him twice.
He was drafted in the same year as RG3, so it was, but you know, they just, that's a little different. He's a different personality. He wanted to play the game. He's like, yeah, let's run it back. Let's run it back. Give me another fully guaranteed year of being the top three salaries in the average.
Rare that a quarterback gets to his franchise tag.
It is, because you're made a decision by then. So you're
Adam Schefter's reported yesterday that the Texans still are hoping that they can extend CJ this offseason.
See, and that's what I think is, I don't see that happening, but
I don't believe it.
I think they'd like to do it at a rate. Even then, it's a little bit of a risk coming off of what you came off of with CJ. There has been a regression, like it or not. You can act like there hasn't been. There's some fans who still act like there hasn't been, but there has been. There's been no growth from that first year. There's been no real tangible growth. It's a little bit of a risk, but the idea, the belief is you either are moving on from him, you know, you're drafting behind him to so that you turn it into a competition, or like with Alex Smith and, you know, and Pat Mahomes. Now they moved up all the way to 10 for Pat Mahomes, the Chiefs. Or you're saying, look, we're just in. We're going in right now with CJ, and that's the way. And I think most people in the league think the Texans will go in with CJ after this year and get a deal done.
Well, but what is, what's the number? Because they're not doing a lower number because CJ hasn't proven it, and the Texans aren't doing a higher number because CJ hasn't proven it. Well, so I don't even think there's a chance this offseason.
No, I don't need, no, this offseason absolutely not, because the numbers won't.
Yeah, Schefter's still reporting that.
Yeah, but the numbers won't add up. That it won't make any sense. But no, I'm sure he is reporting it. But you and I both know Mulgeta has a number. He's not going to want to settle for something less. The Texans aren't just going to give them David Mulgeta's number. They have the leverage right now, so that makes no sense either. So there's no way a deal gets done this offseason. I can't see it happening unless one of those two sides really gives in. Now, they could come together and, you know, do a contract that's like, and this is going to sound insane to some of you, and you just have to understand this is just the economics of it. They could come together and do like a $50 million deal per year with most of it guaranteed. You could try to go short term. If you're the Texans, you could say, look, we'll give you a higher number than probably he deserves right now, but it's going to be a shorter term deal. If you're David Mulgeta, you got to think, well, that's his whole thing is if CJ's on the downside, if CJ mentally is not the same guy, he's going to want as much guaranteed money as possible. So David Mulgeta is going to want like a 6-year deal and try to get all of it fully guaranteed or at least 5 years. If you really had confidence in your player, you'd say, yeah, let's do 3 years, because then we get to the market again. I'm not sure that there is that level of confidence. If you gave them true serum, you said, okay, you want a fully guaranteed, you want 5 of 6 years guaranteed, or do you want 3 years guaranteed, and then you get back to the market where all the rates have gone back up. I'm not 100% sure that a David Mulgeta has the balls to say, yeah, I'm betting on CJ, we'll only take 3 years fully guaranteed. I'm not sure he's doing
that. No, he's not doing that.
I think he wants the longer-term deal.
No, they want to put their name on the biggest and fattest contracts ever. Yeah. He ain't doing that. We got a break, 713-780-3776. If you want to get in here, 713-780-3776.
ESPN 97.5.